Amelia Nathanson, Vice President of Operations with Barnum Financial Group, joins the show this week to talk about her career path and her role within operations. Amelia is a seasoned operations professional focused on client service and mentorship, as well as an adjunct professor of career planning and professional services. Let's get into it. I'm Paul Blanco, and this is Small Steps, Big Wins. Well, Amelia Nathanson, welcome to Small Steps, Big Wins.
I mean, I've been waiting.
You've been waiting. I know.
Just kidding.
Well, you made the cut.
Oh, good.
You're on the show. And, you know, I say this frequently, but when I look at people's careers, it does really take small steps and big wins to get to the position where you are coming on the show and making an impact in this amazing industry. So just to give everyone a little background, or how did you get in this career? And then where did you start? Take us to that journey just first to let, you know, get everyone on the same page here.
Sure. And thanks for asking. And to be honest with you, thank you very much for having me. It is an honor to be on here. It's been great listening to all the episodes so far.
Make sure you give us 5 stars.
Always.
And you click on everything.
Always.
Thank you.
Yes. So starting in financial services, it kind of was a path that I didn't necessarily directly land upon, but all of a sudden it like hit me in the face. So very fortunate to have a very, very positive college experience. I was a finance major undergrad and had several internships that I never really pieced together until it was time to look for full-time employment that had all been with financial services or insurance companies, and actually in the retail space. So working directly with clients, just like we do today, but just various roles and things of that sort. So that combined with my educational background and then getting an opportunity to get my MBA right out of school, having been very active on the college campus, kind of put me in this position to look for opportunities in either space. Actually considered going into the higher ed space as well as into the financial services space. Most of my friends were getting jobs in New York City and investment banks and hedge funds. It was 2008, which is interesting. Found a lot of the folks and my peers have been on the podcast saying that they graduated around the same time, but quickly learned that probably wasn't going to be the environment for me and landed upon a great opportunity to learn the business working with an advisor. And when I say we're in the business, essentially sort of taught myself a lot of it.
That's crazy.
So I was doing insurance, annuities, investments, all doing the client interaction, doing the back office interaction, and just sort of understanding I had an affinity towards that. I was fast, right? And had a global understanding, but I also really liked people, working with people. And then about 13 years ago, I came to Barnum.
It's amazing.
And
that went fast.
Very fast. I've been fortunate to have several different roles at the firm. So I think that helps understand how the firm ticks, you know, having worked in our HR space and our training space, having relationships with advisors overall, and then being able to use that to coach and develop my team as it is now.
Yeah, which is great. So why don't you take us to, let's start there with that. What does the team look like? What is the role today? And let all the listeners understand the scope of what you do today.
Yeah. So my team, if you can believe this, is about 40 deep, 40 individuals supporting all of the different product lines. So all the different lines of business that our advisors work with their clients on. So I always like to say, especially if I talk to a candidate or someone I'm interviewing, you know, our end user client is, of course, that client sitting across the table from their advisor, right? But our day-to-day client is that financial advisor, right? We are trying to cut through the fat on behalf of that advisor with whatever vendor they're utilizing or whatever process they need help with. We are very clearly delineated, right, by product line. So folks that work in the protection space, life, DI, long-term care insurance, our investments team, which handles our layer direct business, as well as our investment business, our annuity team. I oversee our compliance team. And then I also oversee, for about 3 years now, our client service team. So any client of an advisor is, of course, a client of that practice, but it's a client of Barnum's. And so we seek to help those clients directly or on behalf of the advisor, anywhere where you can really help remove a step from the advisor's world where they can be out seeing more clients, selling more. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So that's thank you for that background. So I've been using a phrase for the last couple of years in the industry, and the phrase I've been using is called support and independence. And what I used to say in the old days that you're, you know, if you come to Barnum, you'll be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. But I guess that's not as in vogue today. So supported independence is a better way of saying it. But then I have to explain what that means. So when I think of your team, like you just said it, like cutting out some of the fat for the advisor. And then I also heard something about how the team was pretty functional. But what did, like, if I'm an advisor and I'm at Barnum, what do I get from your team that I'm not getting if I'm not in, if I'm independent or I don't have a supported independence model?
Sure. So then that model's evolved, right? You know, the what you've created here as an ecosystem, as an environment for advisors is really, it doesn't exist. And be brutally honest with you, it is something where if we see a gap, we like essentially plug that hole. So, you know, without getting too granular, in the protection space, if we have a case where we need doctor's records, we have a full-time person on staff who's calling doctor's offices to try to get those records in. You know, they work in conjunction with a vendor that might be paid by the insurance company to do it, but this person really understands what that business looks like. And if we can cut down a day or a month, right, that's exactly what we're aiming to do, to try to just shorten that process for advisors again, so they can be more efficient. That I, when I think of you, I sort of think of that division of labor, right? Everybody doing the best job that they can that's suited for them. But also, you know, aiming to reach those goals altogether, right? With that in mind, knowing those skill sets. Similarly with our investments team, right? So if there are processes that need to be followed, if we can get something escalated. It's a relationship business, as we well know, but our contacts are really, really predominantly how we get things done for advisors. You know, advisors may come to me. I always say I'm not the smartest person on my team. I'm not that subject matter expert, but I know who to go to. And so that's a lot, I think, of where advisors have a gap. They're just calling around, or they're on their phone, or their team's on the phone, their assistant. Just a lot of time wasted that we can really cut out for them.
Yeah, which is amazing. And, you know, to not go really deep on this, but as I've talked to advisors in the industry, you're learning that in the old days, everyone used to talk about payout. And like, I get paid X and you get paid Y. Now they're talking about profit. And what we're finding is our advisors at Barnum probably have a 50% more profit margin because of teams like yours of 40 people that they don't have to go and do on their own.
Sure.
You know, if we take the word support out of supported independence, they would just be independent. And that really means doing everything and getting everything on your own. The other thing is it safe to say that you probably are working with, maybe when you look at the investment side and you put that together with the protection side, maybe 100 different companies that we're selling that are being sold. Is that a fair statement?
That's definitely a fair statement. And then when you think about the subsets of the vendors that flow up those chains, so, you know, working in the protection space, maybe it's a lender you're working with, right? Some of the banks and things of that sort. When you're talking about investments, some of the direct companies, and then of course, in the insurance space, it's tens, you know, at a minimum. So understanding what their processes are, trying to have a key contact at each of those relationships when you do have an escalation, understanding just the language that we should be using, the right person to ask for on the phone. So just some of those things that through years of practice and best practices, we've been able to do and really build here.
Cool. And that's really exciting. Let's talk about, there's a word that's like been around forever, but I feel like it's the buzzword of 23 and 24 in the industry, and especially if you're an entrepreneur, and they keep using the word scale. And when I think of scale, immediately my mind goes to technology, because, you know, before you scale with people, which is what our world did for a long time, over the last 20 years, the best business in the world are saying, let's take technology first, scale there before we scale with people and see what we can do. I'd like to understand how your team is using technology to make their job and your relationship with your advisors and their staff more efficient.
Sure. So first, I'll level set, because as you know, I'm a very transparent leader, right? The first piece is, this is always going to be human business, always. And I think we've done a really good job there in leveraging technology, systems and processes internally here at the firm, as well as the ones, to be honest with you, in an operation space that you're given, essentially, and you get what you get, right? Yeah. And then you work through those. And we've definitely partnered on a lot of those projects through the years. But it's important to realize where that technology is strong, and then where you can actually put the humans in the seats, where you need those physical phone calls to be made and meet those pieces. So there are definitely systems and processes at the firm that have benefited advisors' practices so much. And I've been fortunate to sit on different task forces and work with them in those ways as well. But having operations be able to leverage those systems and build updates and process requirements on the same platform that advisors use to get their leads, to make dials, to have case notes, and have everything live in that ecosystem has been very, I think, impactful overall for the advisor. And then as we talk about how operations fits into the overall model of the firm, how we can report on things, how we can figure out where there's gaps, how we can have certain dashboards that give information to you or to other stakeholders, to individual advisors. So being able to leverage, you know, the technology that we've used at the firm, but also as we've seen the industry develop too, scalability in spaces like investments where clients can see everything aggregated in one place, training advisors on the best system for each and every client. You know, is it a multi-product household? They should probably have this platform for their client versus maybe an insurance-only client who can log in from here. And that's various partnerships, right? It's the true new business team we support, as well as client service too.
Yeah. And you made an interesting point earlier. When you were talking about your team and people, you said that if we find a gap, we basically go and plug that gap and fill that. Well, when I think of technology, once again, another buzzword that's been around for a while is called being agile. And what agile means is, I think just what you said earlier with people was plugging a hole and figuring out how to maximize that. It seems like you and your team are doing a lot of that, where you're taking on stuff, you're seeing the gap from a technology standpoint, and then internally you're working to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Am I correct in saying that?
You're totally correct. I'll use the example of the shared services model that came up just within the last year or so, right? So we have advisors here with very defined practices, lots of different roles, even within their teams. They interface with my team on a daily basis. But we also have a subset of advisors that maybe doesn't need full-time staff of their own because they do have my team, but there's a gap in the middle, right? Who's actually interacting with every single one of those clients? They just don't have the time, the advisor. So we put a model in place where we actually hired an individual, and I think agile, right? I had to get out of my own head with the idea and just say, let's try it, right? Let's pilot it with several advisors. And now this individual is supporting three teams, 10 advisors in doing applications and just general client interfacing before it gets to my team. And we're looking to grow that model substantially with our internal advisors, but just another way that now they can maximize either staff that they do have, right? Or have their first staff person while still building their business here.
Well, it's interesting that you use that, and it made me reflect a little bit on, you know, the diverse customer that you have coming to your team, right? When you think of a firm of this size with, you know, 300 plus advisors, you have brand new advisors that are coming to you that probably don't even know where to start.
Yep.
To the veteran team that has, you know, 22 staff, and you have to be able to help them to benefit from the scale and the team that you've built. So how does that work?
That's a great question.
Right.
You know, and I have like pictures in my head of the two very different dynamics that you're talking about as well. So probably our top producing largest team, their practice manager, very skilled, very, very intelligent, but probably have an email from her once a week like, hey, I need your help. I don't know where to turn to, right? So where they might have processes and procedures, they may look for help for escalations. And that's where we use, you know, the Barnum name or the scale or the amount of business just in, you know, collaboration to be able to get that solved for that type of practice. With a younger advisor, they're just looking for direction, right? So they may be spending, you know, a couple hours a week getting started with just somebody on my team who's their new business person, and they're helping them with systems and processes and understanding field underwriting. Another piece that my team does take on is training, the training aspect, logistically, if you will. So they're getting a ton of sales training here. But, you know, what actually happens in terms of I got somebody to say yes, what happens next from a process standpoint? I think my team is very strong there when it comes to new advisors and teaching them the right processes that will do some of those things we talked about earlier, cut down on time, cut down on questions, or, you know, clients maybe not trusting the process per se, because we can teach them, you know, here's the expectations you should be setting, timeline wise, calls, requirements that they're going to have to do in those different spots.
Yeah, that's really good. Thank you for that. As we're talking through this, is it important that your team is, and you obviously are looking at like data and metrics to help you to make decisions or to understand where your opportunities are or you're weak and you need to change?
For sure. There's a lot that we've looked at through the years as, again, some of that stuff that we talked about earlier, systems are given to you, right? We have to learn how we need to pivot in that direction or pivot away potentially from a system that is not working for us. Here you give us a ton of autonomy to be able to either make a change or at least have a dialogue around it. So I think metrics have been super crucial to that. Obviously, we are all driving towards that same goal, and your advisor's individual goals will contribute to that bigger picture. But it's very helpful to have those directions and those, you know, spots that help keep you on track as far as that goes. Again, being able to use the same tool to see the ecosystem of where a case is coming in all the way to it getting issued or funded, as well as, you know, tracking just sort of money in motion. Where is money being put into originally versus where does it end up in the client household is stuff that you and I speak about too. And I think that helps drive the advisor's direction as well. I think that's one of the greatest things here is that our opportunities are huge because of all of the divisions that we do have, but we're small enough to still understand how we impact one another.
Yeah, which is great. And that's being agile with the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about leadership for a little bit. So, you know, I look at this industry and, you know, running this firm now for 31 years, when I came here, it was the head of the firm and the head of ops and maybe three other people, right? And now there's lots of divisions, but people that got the role of the vice president of operations was probably one of the hardest workers or maybe had the most knowledge, but didn't mean that they were a great leader and they only had two people. So now fast forward, you have, like you said it earlier, probably like five or six different departments that flow up through you, five or six department leaders and 40 total people. So if you're not a leader and don't have leadership ability, that could be a really hard role for someone like yourself. How do you look at that and what's your leadership style with your team?
Thanks for asking a very hard question, boss.
It is a hard one.
No. I think it has evolved through the years. I'm very fortunate, I mentioned it earlier, to have had several roles at the firm before this, and some were more entry level, some were managerial, where maybe I had one person reporting to me, et cetera, et cetera. But understanding fundamentally how this firm works, as well as sitting in the HR seat and understanding values and the things that we wanted fundamentally from folks that work here, have allowed me to apply that to my leadership style. I think I'm a very transparent leader.
I was going to say, what talk about your transparency.
I believe hugely in feedback, and the importance of it, and the fact that feedback is just facts. It should not have a connotation to it.
But it always has emotion to it.
Right.
You really can't take that out, even though you think you can. You can't.
No, you can't take the emotion out of it, right? But you also have to learn what drives each and every person.
Fair.
I think in my seat, I have an interesting perspective because my team is so motivated by different things. I have some individuals who want to grow and develop, and I have some people who just want to earn a good living and have a job that's loyal to them, and they'll be loyal to the company. Yeah. And I think that it's an interesting dynamic, right? I've seen a lot of generations come in and manage different generations too, right? In my staff. And I think that's very important to me to understand what makes each one of them tick. Personally, professionally, and then help them grow from there. I also love that my team has been essentially a breeding ground for other roles at the firm. I've been interviewing actually for additional roles that we're adding to the firm because we're growing so substantially, which is so cool.
Yes.
But when applicants ask me questions like, so what does growth look like? Or what's the trajectory? And I'm able to think literally of four or five people who have worked under me that now have totally different roles at the firm. And it wasn't a ladder, right? They went in a different direction. They went towards sales. They went towards support in another way. They've gotten credentialed. It's just an amazing environment to be able to coach and develop in that way.
Well, it's interesting, you know, for me coming up, you know, growing up in business, there was very, I'm glad to hear you say that because there was very structured growth plans that when you're coming out of college that kids were attracted to in the law business or in consulting, and it should do this and you go here and you go here. And I said, and then you would hear by they got to year four and they were stuck. And that visual that they saw, that ladder going up, just ended.
Yes.
And then they stayed there. And I was very purposeful on trying to build something that was very different, but more flat, that, hey, we can go here or there, but it takes a great leader to be willing to do that. And I commend you for letting your people do that. But I think that holds, and that's, people don't want that stringent stuff as much as they did in the old days to today.
And they want to be known, right? They want to just have that awareness that they're part of a firm that values them and understands them as the whole person. And then if there is opportunity that you're thinking to yourself, wow, that person really could be very strong in that seat over there that either didn't exist or never thought of them in that particular way. So it's very, very, very empowering to be able to lead in that way. A team like this that, you know, if you looked at another company or looked at a parallel in a corporate company, might be a totally different model. So I'm glad you asked the question. It's a tough question, but I'm glad you asked.
No, it's great. And obviously having a little bit of an advantage here, knowing you and your day to day, you know, you are on the leadership team and you have a very predominant role in a lot of task force on the leadership team. And maybe you could explain how that works, because I don't know if a lot of businesses are using that sort of method to, I think it all comes down to co-creating.
Yes.
And we use a line that it's, you know, built for advisors by advisors. And obviously with the leadership team, that's kind of our mantra to grow this thing. How do you feel about that? And how does that make you feel as a leader?
You know, I have to be honest with you, and listen, you know that we're very close. I don't want this to, it is your show, but I don't want this to be, you know, I don't want your head to get too big. But I think I honestly noticed it probably my first year here, just sitting in an HR seat, that you were so just present. And I physically mean around. You were always there. And to have a leader of your caliber, just kind of like, hey, he's really involved. And then now knowing what your day-to-day looks like, and you're that involved with all your advisors, right? And then you're that involved with all of us as leaders. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of attention. And you do a really good job at that. So being able to model that, I think, in, you know, to answer your question in that way, I think we all have to understand we need to always be listening to our advisors, even in minute conversations that we might be having about a piece of business, right? In my world, how does that impact how we're making decisions about a system or about innovation or about our leads program. So being able to utilize my role, have my listening ears on, and then sit on a task force and be able to provide my style, but also my perspective from the line of business I cover, right? Has definitely been something that I think impacts the firm. And I think my peers probably do the same thing, but we've really modeled it over, you know, 12 years ago, there were much fewer of us, to be honest. So we had to sort of mirror those behaviors from you and make it more scalable, to be honest. Now we have more folks underneath us and some of that work has shifted downstream. So that's helpful. But I just think it's that empowerment of understanding this is where I fit. This is my role, but I have more to say about it because my context might be very different than somebody's who's in charge of that area.
But I also think, though, do you feel this way? Do you think empowerment for a leader comes with a lot of responsibility then?
Sure. And when I think about those 40 people and how important their roles are here, I definitely take that very seriously. But I also know we have people who are very loyal to our firm and a lot of tenure, right? People wouldn't stay if they didn't entrust our leadership style collectively. And we are very fortunate to have people who come here and stay from an advisor perspective too, which is very interesting.
Well, I think that for all the entrepreneurs that are listening, or if you're running a team and you have employees, I think one of the things, you know, as you know from the show, I grew up with an athletic background. And I'll use a football analogy because I think they're a very big team compared to, say, baseball. If Tom Brady throws a winning touchdown to tie the score and the long snapper, the center, doesn't make a good snap to the field goal kicker and he misses it, they could lose the game or go into overtime, where each person in the staff is just as critical as the next, just they have a different responsibility than maybe the quarterback, the center, or the field goal kicker. And I think people have not taken that into business. And they marginalize people. And when people feel empowered to do their job, they do it at a much higher level. You don't even have to. It becomes the standard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you've been able to do with your team.
Well, thank you. I really think it's all about knowing that, right? And understanding what makes each of those people tick.
Yeah. So I'll throw another hard one at you here. So
hopefully it's not related to football because that went right over my head, to be honest.
I saw you glancing over.
I glazed over.
Who is the center? What's that person do?
He said Tom Brady. I don't know.
Yeah. He's on Dancing with the Stars or something. But listen, I mean, your energy is contagious and how you think about it and show up. But I'm sure every day is not roses. And I'm sure that, you know, I talk about in business, there's an S curve, right? And, you know, we have figured out how to make the S curve always go down somewhere during the year, but always go up at the end. But there's an S curve on the days. So I'm sure you wake up and you come in with all great intentions and your day is rolling along and then boom, an advisor calls and it's a tough one, or there's a situation that you have to deal with. How do you work on that mentally to show up and make sure you're bringing your best each day and dealing with that throughout those emotional days that you have?
Sure. I think that it's a lot of perspective, right? Being resilient is not a skill you're born with, to be fair. I also know I have to model for all those folks that sit right outside my door that I can't be the person, you know, throwing a coffee cup.
That was me like 30 years.
I try to take every interaction with the standpoint that there's somebody on the other side of this that wants something out of this conversation. It might be something very different than what
it's a great way to look at it.
I want out of it, but we need to come to either a common ground or decide who's going to win. Sometimes I'm not going to win. And I try to tell my team that too. Like, hey, everything, if you tried to win at everything, you'd be mentally exhausted. So let's just figure out how to get this person sometimes off our plate, whether that's a client, a vendor, a policy that we don't agree with. I also think that I learned that there's always a human being on the other side. So if an advisor is not in the best of moods, it's likely because they're advocating for someone who is a client of theirs who needs something, right? Yeah. So looking at that, who is the end user? And what do they need? Right. There is an actual client on the other end of this policy or rule. Right. We deal with a lot of rules and I'm a rule follower for the most part. But, you know, if somebody needs their distribution, somebody needs their money, that's to pay for something. That's for, you know, someone's household. And so being able to provide my team that perspective, like, hey, let's just look at this a little bit different. I know that it's flowing like this, but this is more than likely the reality.
Well, let's stay there for a second, because I think you brought up a point that I wanted to make sure I hit on. So when I came in the business, I really came in on the life insurance protection side only. So when you're 22, 23 years old and you're going out and telling people, even though there's owner benefits to life insurance, like cash value and stuff, there is the part of that you're going to pass away. And when you start saying that every day, it makes you grow up pretty quickly. But you quickly, I had a death claim probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks into my role as an advisor that I did. And it made me realize the benefits of the work I did. When you were just talking about how there's a client on the other end, does your team understand it could be dollars coming in for investment products and that now that person could retire and doesn't have to work when they're in their 70s and 80s mm-hmm. and they're able to enjoy that last, you know, 30 years, say, plus of their life, or it could be on the protection side. Does that resonate with your team, and do you have to remind them of that?
I think it definitely resonates. I also think we get to deal with the interesting perspective of the other side. So I mentioned rules, right? And having a lot of rule followers on my team, and also seeing some of the scenarios with compliance that, yes, we do understand the importance of what that product or transaction is for that client, but we also look out for their best interests. So if it's something that is questionable, whether that's a signature or calling a client out to make sure this is really what they wanted or intended, that's an important part of our business too. And sometimes, you know, operations is seen as the roadblock, but oftentimes that can be the differential as well, that we're adding that extra level of protection. You know, we're living in a world where our industry is directly impacted by fraud, scams.
Sure.
And those have been actually some of the more impactful situations that I've been in or been able to help is, you know, somebody's being, you know, elder abuse or, you know, something along those lines, or a transaction went wrong for a retiree and we're working to help reverse it. So I think it's both. I think it's actually both sides of that. It's at the new business or sales side, but also on the in-force side.
That's great. And, you know, this has been amazing. I guess my last question, you're not going to say it's hard, so it's not going to be hard, but what's next for your team? And then what's next for you?
Ooh, I love that one. I think that we as a team need to continue to work through what you've taught me along the way. The bureaucracy is never going to officially just go away. You can have the best technology in the world. Again, still human business. So making sure that my team is at the forefront of what that looks like and continues to advocate for our advisors at a global level or a back office level. For me, woof, I just want to help you grow this thing, right? It's right. So fun to come to work every day. I really do mean that. There's so much autonomy and ability to work with my peers. That as a leader on this team, it's just very much a place where I look forward to showing up literally like in my seat, as well as, you know, bringing my best and bringing my skill set and talents here too. So I certainly want to grow, and learn as much as I can more and, have some fun while we're doing it.
Well, I'm glad that, you know, as I go back to the beginning of the show and you talked about coming out of school and looking at higher ed plus finance, and that your journey ended up from New York to Connecticut. And I always like to say this, but it's really true. And the small steps, what people don't understand in their career is you do have to take small steps and you have to take some risk with those small steps and win at them to get the big win.
Yeah.
And I think you did that. And, you know, I learned something very interesting. Theo Epstein, who is known for helping the Red Sox and the Cubs win their first World Series as the general manager, he was interviewed. I heard him interviewed twice. And the question was asked to him, how did you get where you were? Because he was like a GM in his early 30s. And he said, I looked at the boss and I found out all the things he hated doing and all the things that he didn't want to do. And I learned how to do those. And when I think of what you do that for advisors, you do that for staff, you do that for your other leaders around here. So can't thank you enough for what you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, thanks. That means a lot to me. And like I said, it's really, truly a pleasure here. And what we have built collectively is, it's like nothing else. So
I care. So if you want supported independence, come here. If not, listen to the show and give us a good rating. So everybody have a great day. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Small Steps, Big Wins. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions their respective parent companies or affiliates or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated. Investments or strategies mentioned in this program may not be suitable for you, and you should make your own independent decision regarding them. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. You should strongly consider seeking advice from your own investment advisor. Securities and investment advisory services offered through qualified registered representatives of MML Investor Services, LLC. Member SIPC, 6 Corporate Drive, Shelton, Connecticut, 06484, telephone number 203-513-6000.